Welcome to the Roadmap to Wealth show. The show is hosted by the Invest Tribe community, a total European resource for anyone looking to succeed in all sorts of investing. Real estate, stock market, bonds and ETFs, cryptocurrency, foreclosure, peer-to-peer lending, business and startups. Before we get to today's interview, if you are a new listener, be sure to go to investtribe.org and subscribe, because we offer content, tools, and an international community of experts, newbies, and everyone in between to help people to learn investing, network, find partners, deals, and financing, and make the best investing decisions possible. Let us start the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Roadmap to Wealth podcast, where we will get valuable insight in real estate, personal finance, and wealth building strategies. In today's episode, we will be enlightened by the founder and host of the Richest Greek podcast, which is eager to help IT and other professionals to achieve financial freedom. Nicole started investing in single-family properties and now in hotels, none other than Nicole Stoner. Thank you so much, Nicole, for accepting our invitation to inspire us today. How are you, Nicole?
I am great. Thank you so much, Elena. I am excited to chat with you today.
Thank you very much for you coming. My introduction to you is really short, so can you please tell us more about yourself? How all this thing started?
How all these things started was a really long time ago now. My husband and I started investing in real estate in right around 1999. And it's really important to note that that particular time period, the internet was just coming online, so to speak. There wasn't the community that exists today. There weren't any social media sites, that type of thing. So we kind of floundered quite a bit in the very beginning and ended up deciding, okay, you know, if we want to be in this business, we need to learn it. So my husband went to go work in property management. I've always had my career in tech. I love tech. It's just such a fascinating place to be. So it's never been my intention to not have that career. And I've always felt like it's good to have a balance of both, to have real estate investments and to have a career as well.
Thank you very much, Nicole. So I know you have a very great story entering the world of real estate. So how did it happen?
What happened was I read the book everybody has read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, everybody who gets started in real estate, I should say. So I read this book and it really inspired me, which the overall premise is about owning and investing in assets, which could be real estate. It could be a business as well. In our case, the real estate was really appealing. And I'm very much of an action taker. I immediately signed us up for a seminar. We went to the seminar and they taught us creative ways to buy real estate with quote unquote zero money. So I want to be clear here. It does require some money, but maybe not going out and getting a traditional mortgage and putting 20% down. So there was some investment. And we came back and we knew how to go look and find properties. So my husband did that and we found three properties. The problem was that seminar didn't teach us how do you actually evaluate the properties. Are they good properties? Because even if you don't pay anything for them, you need to understand if they're just going to take all your capital. The other thing we never learned was how do you manage the properties, right? How do you screen for tenants? How do you make sure they don't walk all over you? Are you buying in the right area, right? So many things that we did not know. All we learned was how to buy, which we did, and all those other principles. So it became a very losing situation. And about 6 months into it, I couldn't sleep at night. I was worried about the situation. We were losing money hand over fist. Some of the properties we couldn't get rented. It was quite challenging. And we decided to give them back. And in that case, because we had bought them in a creative way, we could do that. We didn't have mortgages on them. So we gave them back. We lost all that money. we actually ended up moving in with my parents to be able to save money to get out of the debt that we had created as a result of that. And then that was also a decision point where we felt like, hey, we still want to do this. We're not sour on real estate. We just know that there's a lot we didn't know. How can we get that education? And we decided that my husband should go work in property management. So that's what he then proceeded to do, and then gave him the basis for understanding all those things we didn't know, which is how do you manage residents and tenants and how do you optimize your property? So that's kind of the story.
That is kind of the story. I agree with you, Nicole. So you mentioned earlier the book that opened your eyes on real world of the real estate. What are the favorite lessons you found in this book?
Well, I guess the overall premise was, and just still sticks with me today, is that to be able to grow your income and your wealth, you need to invest in the right type of assets. And you maybe need to think creatively about some things. Like with, for example, with Airbnb as now a mechanism that enables you to rent out a vacation house instead of you just going out and buying a vacation house and having that cost that doesn't generate any revenue for you. Now you could put it on the Airbnb platform and get some revenue, maybe even make money from an investment that you also get to enjoy. A similar interview, I actually haven't run yet on my podcast, but a gentleman who wanted a Tesla really, really badly. And he said, how can I do this? And he figured out that if he could put it on a platform, it's called Toro, which is where you can rent out your vehicles, usually higher end type of vehicles. He only needed to rent it out X amount of days per month and he would cover his payment. And then he would be able to enjoy it the rest of the days. So the book is about that, right? It's about understanding where to invest. And then there's some pieces about tax benefits and some other components that you would get as a result of actually owning a business.
Thank you very much. You're really amazing. You have your own real estate investment firm while you're working full-time in an IT company. How do you do this?
It's a great question. A couple of things. Right now, we are 100% in hotels, and that is all of our investment portfolio that's real estate. And with hotels, what we have in place is property management. I'm not always a fan of property management. When we had apartment complexes, we did more of our self-management, but hotels are a different animal and a different beast. It's a 24/7 operation. There's staffing. It is a full-fledged business. So it really is helpful to have property management in place, which we do. And then my husband oversees the property management companies. And then he also provides communication back and forth and provides updates and works with our investor community. The pieces that I do are anything that can be done at 3 a.m. or in the evening. And as we were chatting a little bit earlier, I do get up at 3, and what I do is I'll be working on, you know, what does the investor update need to look like? What are the metrics that we need to share and show? Those types of things I do basically in the off hours. And the other piece that I would add is that we have a virtual assistant who basically handles a lot of the other reporting mechanisms that I send to her, and she formats and puts things together so that we have a dashboard and we can see what's going on.
Thank you very much. And your successful story, you had an amazing story, but I know that every story has some setbacks. How do you cope with them?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and especially very timely. You know, we're in the middle of COVID-19. We're in hotels. And anyone who's familiar or been watching what's happening with hospitality, this has been a very, very hard hit industry. So here's a couple of things that we've done, and it's a setback, right? Right now, the hotels aren't as profitable as they had been. We are simply not booking the amount of guests. People are not traveling as much. What we did is, in the very beginning, when everything really started to surface, we pulled all the levers possible. So to deal with a setback is, I think you need a plan. You need to say, okay, I'm going to you know, make these changes, or I'm going to go get this education. Like our setback in the very beginning, which was, you know, we weren't successful with those initial properties. How we dealt with that was, okay, here's our plan. We're going to give those back. They weren't good properties, and we're going to go learn. In this case, with the hotels, we said, okay, we're going to pull every lever possible. And by that, I mean that there are a lot of mechanisms in the hotel industry because it is a business that you can maneuver, and especially in this type of situation. For example, you have less trash pickup, you reduce your number of staff, you cut your expenses, you get PPP loans. All of those are available because essentially hotels are small businesses. So dealing with a setback is really just saying, okay, what's my plan? And then work that plan from there.
Thank you very much. It's very valuable advice. You started with single family properties, as I know, and you go then to multiple family properties and now hotels. How did it all happen? Why finally hotels?
Oh, that's a long journey. That's a great question. Yes, I think most people do get started with single family properties. And I will say those are still really viable, very profitable, and to me, a very rock solid investment if you bought the right kind of property. And you know, don't buy a single family home and fix it up the way that you would want to live in it. Let me clarify. If it's an Airbnb property, yes, it probably does need to look a certain way. But if it's a long term rental, you know, think about who's actually living there, and don't invest too much money in fixing it up. But we started with those single family properties. We moved into the smaller multifamily, like a threeplex and a fourplex, that type of thing. And we took the big leap into a 28 unit. Actually, we went from about a 7 unit, which, you know, kind of just started growing and growing, to a 28 unit. And I remember that was so scary. Right? 28 individual apartments, you know, lots of cleanup that needed to happen, really challenging property. But then once you do that, you kind of get a flow under your belt. And then we moved into a 50 unit. And then from there into hotels. And the transition from apartment complexes into hotels, it happened because we're in the Phoenix metro market, and Phoenix multifamily small apartment complexes have been a very hot, fast-growing asset at least since 2015. So it's been a very long run, at least 5 years, and still the valuations continue to grow, the appreciation continues to grow, and the rents have grown. So as a result, what we found is when we got an unsolicited offer to sell our 50 unit, we could not find any multifamily properties that met our investment criteria. We weren't really willing to take like a 5% cap rate. I get some people are, but there's too much work involved. And if that's all we're going to be looking at, it just wasn't really worth it. So we transitioned into hotels because we were seeing much higher cap rates, much higher revenue. And then, you know, it was an opportunity to learn another side of the business.
It's a fantastic story. So please answer the following question, and it's interesting. Many people are interested in it. So what are the characteristics you need to look for in a property? Do you have some kind of a standards in investing in hotels or multi-properties or on single family? But anyway, share your experience with all type of investment you've done before.
Yes, you definitely need to, before you even look. This is what I would recommend. Before, don't even look. Don't get on LoopNet. Don't get on the MLS. Don't start searching until you have created your investment criteria. So your criteria might be that you want a cash flow of $200 a month. Your criteria might be that you want to be able to see rent increases, right? Like you need to figure out what your criteria is. Then you go find a property that meets that. I would say the hotels, what's really interesting, again, about being in the middle of COVID-19 is that we were actively searching for our next hotel in about the January, February timeframe. We were touring hotels. We were meeting with brokers. We were putting out there that we were looking for off-market properties. And our criteria is, it's almost amazing to think about, because it's completely the opposite now. Our criteria is, we wanted hotels with a conference center because we wanted to be able to attract business travelers. We wanted a hotel with a restaurant because we wanted to be able to increase our revenues with food and beverage. The hotels that we're in today are limited service hotels, which means that they have free breakfast, they have free amenities, but they don't have an on-site restaurant, they don't have conference facilities, etc. After we're in the middle of COVID, our criteria suddenly changes because we realize we, in our limited service hotel, have been the most successful area of hotels, and the high end, like the resorts and the conference hotels and all of those types of properties, have really struggled. And why? Because there's no business travel. There's the food and beverage has been shut down. So it's been really interesting. We also benefit today. Our properties are right off interstates, very, very close. And they tend to be what I always say is an on-the-way property. You're driving, you want to stop for the night, you stay at our hotel. And it's also conveniently located near other economic drivers, but it's very much of an on-the-way. It's not a resort, don't have a spa, right? We do have a pool, but you know, it's a nice, clean, safe place to stay. We have benefited greatly from that as well during COVID, because now as the country opens up, people still don't really want to fly. They're not going to destination places, but they're absolutely driving. And so on the way actually has worked out quite well for us. So what I would say is, to your initial question, is develop your criteria. Decide what it is you want. So what kind of cash flow, what kind of cap rate, where you want the property to be, what kind of economic drivers. You know, you want to have a property in a growing place where people are moving to, and then be willing to tweak it, because things change for us, but only tweak it for the positive. Don't tweak it because you fall in love with a property and you're willing to take less cash flow. Don't do that.
Thank you very much for your answers. It's absolutely useful for the people who listen to us. The next question is, you mentioned pandemic situation, and your description is very interesting. I don't invest in hotels myself, but for those who invest, it can be very interesting to hear. So during the pandemic situation that we have right now, how is it affecting real estate business in global?
Every market's a little bit different, right? And you know, real estate is a localized type of investment. I can only really speak to Phoenix because that's the market that we're in, and we absolutely are watching everything that's happening across all of the different sectors because they are interconnected. What you would see in Phoenix right now is that the Class A apartment complexes have some decrease in their rents. This is because, you know, people have been harder hit. They haven't been able to make their rent payments. They're maybe not traveling as much. So you do see some kind of a hit there. And then also, in the B's and C's as well. So really kind of all depending on the mix of residents. And if the residents can, you know, if they're in a job, like if they're in hospitality, then they could have been hard hit as a result, or if they're in restaurant, etc. Single family homes have continued to sell like crazy, and inventory is very low still in the Phoenix metro market. So if you were investing in long-term single family rentals, they've been doing really well. The reason people continue to move to Phoenix, the interest rates are low. It's just made inventory really challenging to find. So it's pretty hard to find bargains if you're looking to get into single family rentals. The other thing that we see is the Airbnb market is actually doing pretty well in this area as well. And that's because people are driving and then maybe booking a place and then feeling like, okay, you know, we need some kind of getaway, and so they're driving to that type of thing. Although there's not as many things for them to do, but they can still golf. I would say, I will say that in the Phoenix area. And then hotels, it is a mixed story. The hotels that cater to, again, the on the way traveler, the hotels that are extended stay, those are doing really well as well. But the high-end resorts, which we have a lot of in the Phoenix market, are not doing well.
Thank you very much, Nicole. So what is the plan B? Is it more like a contingency plan or not?
Yeah, so I'm one of those people that I always want to have a contingency plan for everything, right? So even a contingency plan for the properties that we buy. What if things don't work out? What will we do? What are our options? And when I say plan B, what I mean by that is that I personally don't believe in only investing in the stock market. Now, I do believe investing in the stock market 100%. I think you should max out your 401k. I think you should do, leverage your IRA, et cetera. You should do all of that. But I also think that you should look at investments that also give you cash flow now, which would be owning a business, owning real estate, something like that. And it's your retirement plan B if you're retiring in a time when the stock market's, really down, right? And now you're worried about what are you going to live on. So I just believe in a plan B as diversified investment, essentially.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely agree with you. So when planning to enter the world of real estate, somebody who wants to enter is not normally occupied with the skill and knowledge. What are the things that you did to acquire the knowledge and skills once you applied it, you are successful in this field?
Build a network and create relationships and potentially look for a mentor. I say that a little cautiously because what I will see is people will go on Bigger Pockets and they will say, hey, I'm new to real estate investing. I need a mentor. That's not the way to go about that. What I would recommend is go find local groups that are meeting. And of course, everybody's meeting virtually right now, but join those, start to meet with people, ask questions, show interest in what they're doing, offer to help and learn that way. There's a lot of nuances and there's a lot of people that have failed and are willing to share, oh, that's a gotcha, don't do that, here's why. And you wouldn't know that. These meetups and these groups also share very valuable information. I actually used to host one here in Scottsdale, and I had a lawyer come in. One of my friends is really in real estate law, and I asked her to come in and talk about, the things that you just don't think about when you're maybe selling or buying a property. So join those groups so that you can get that kind of education and you can meet people. And who knows, you might find someone you end up partnering up with. That's what I would recommend as really kind of a first starting point.
Thank you very much for your advice. It's absolutely, I absolutely 100% agree with you. The networking is the base for everything. And yes, joining some meetups, mingling with people, speaking over Zoom, I don't know, because yes, now meeting people face-to-face is more delicate. But yes, there are still online groups that you can meet people. And actually, yes, Nifty Boss is also a platform is so that people can connect to each other and find some valuable advice, network, and this kind of stuff. So this is one of the goals in Richer Geek, which is to achieve financial freedom. How does one can finally achieve the financial freedom?
Great question. The premise of financial freedom is that you have enough money coming in my opinion, non-active activity that then covers your expenses, essentially. So that would be you've invested in a syndication, you have or you have 10 rental properties, or you have some other kind of business that basically is generating enough income revenue that pays your expenses. And the way that you get there is you can reduce expenses, you work really hard to build up, some kind of business, or you work really hard, you put all of your extra funds into real estate, or you hustle, maybe you become, you do some flips, make some bigger amounts of money, put that into more sustainable long-term investments. So that's essentially what financial freedom is, that you have enough income coming in that you don't actively have to go out and get. But make no mistake, you had to actively at some point get there, right? There's a lot of work involved to get to that point.
Absolutely agree with you. It's for sure it's like this. So the next question is, you mentioned in the beginning of the interview, books of Kiyosaki, The Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Do you have any particular person that you look up to?
Oh my gosh, I look up to so many people. I look up to people in tech, right? There's some amazing people. I think, people like Elon Musk, he's brilliant, right? He's got amazing strategies. I look up to people that I work with every day in real estate. I look up to people. I do think there's a broad range of people out there in real estate that are trying to appear that they are coaches. And I don't know, I would like to know how much have they actually done. And so I would want to validate that. But, I don't think I can put my finger on one person, except for I did mention Elon Musk, because he's brilliant.
Yes, I see. Thank you very much. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 20 years old self?
Wow. Here's the thing. I don't think you can tell sometimes you have to live through it, right? So I could go back and I could say, don't buy those properties, right? You don't know what you're doing. Living through it was actually so valuable, even though it was incredibly painful. It's a part of our DNA now. It's a part of our history, and it shaped the way that we approach everything since. And when I talk about failures and getting mentors, you want to work with people who've been through, who have those battle scars, because they're gonna steer you. And if you listen to their story, so I would have had to have heard someone else's story, because I probably wouldn't listen to myself. When you're young like that, you think you know everything. And now I know nothing. So.
Thank you very much, Nicole. What tips can you give to our listeners who want to start a journey in real estate right now?
First of all, you should absolutely join Bigger Pockets. Familiarize yourself with all of the different niches, right? I have not discussed, people invest in storage units as an example. I don't know anything about that. But on Bigger Pockets, you will find people who understand that part of the industry. My husband and I have never flipped homes. You will find people who've done that as well. So join Bigger Pockets, because it'll give you exposure to a lot of different types of niches. But also formulate your plan. Like, why are you wanting to invest in real estate? What is it you want to accomplish 10 years from now? How do you think that you would want to get there? And then what is the right niche to do that? And then through Bigger Pockets, you can meet the different people, you can join the different webinars, and you can start to learn about that niche. The other thing I would do is I'd work on building relationships with people that are in that niche. But again, you have to add value to them. So don't reach out and just ask them to be a mentor or ask them if you can pick their brain. You have to figure out a way that you can, provide valuable information to them or share an interesting topic. It's a relationship and you have to work to build that. So that's what I would do. Create your goal, create your overall, what are you trying to accomplish? And understand it's going to change, right? It absolutely will. But create that, join Bigger Pockets, learn about the different niches and what's going to get you to your plan.
Thank you very much, Nicole, for your advice. It's been a fruitful day for us with all this teaching that you give us today, Nicole. Do you have any message for our listeners?
Well, thank you for tuning in and listening. What I would say is there are absolutely bumps in the road, but you want to get started. The sooner you do, the sooner you're going to start to learn and build your network. And you can always check out my podcast as well at therichergeek.com.
Thank you very much, Nicole. And the last question is, how people can connect with you?
The best place is actually either on my website, therichergeek.com, or on LinkedIn, and you can connect with me there.
Thank you very much, Nicole, for your time. It was a very nice interview, and we can learn a lot of things. And I hope to see you soon for another interview. Have a nice day, and see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for checking out the show. And don't forget, you can find all the resources, links, and show notes over at investtribe.org. See you next week on the Roadmap to Wealth show.